Obviously, while this is our normal Tehillim class, I thought on Yom HaShoah, it would be an opportune time to explore some topics that we don't ordinarily get to explore in our regular Tehillim class, but that I think can be quite thought-provoking and perhaps even inspirational as well. And so what I want to talk about this morning is why evil exists. Now, why evil exists is obviously not something that Rabbi Philip Moskowitz came up with and was bothered by. This is obviously a question that has plagued people time immemorial. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, when he comes to the burning bush and he asks Hashem, what will I call them? How will they know you? And Chazal tells that Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about the principles of Tzadik V'Ra'lo and Rasha V'Tovlo. How do we understand the nature of the universe, Hashem? How do we understand how bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? Ribono Shel Olam, how could it be fair that all of this is going to happen? And of course, Hashem says to Moshe that, no dice, I will not tell you the secrets of my world. No human being will ever come to know exactly how I'm able to run my world. And quite honestly, we can end the class right there. And I could tell you that Vayidom Aaron, as Mrs. Ruth Lichtenstein said so poignantly last night, when asked about her family's reaction to the Holocaust, the mass annihilation of so many Jews, specifically in that context, Hasidus in Europe. And she said that it was Vayidom Aaron that they accepted and they rebuilt. And of course, that is that could be the shir right there. And we could all give a whole shir about the principle of Vayidom Aaron. But what I want to do actually is to take us on a journey. Because while we all might come to the same conclusion, I think the journey of how we get there is critically important. And I want to do so by sharing an article or a piece with you from Rav Shlomo Aviner. It's called Yotzer Or. And I found it very thought-provoking. I thought that he carried you through all the different options, really, and helped me think it through. And I want to share it with you here this morning, not because I'm convinced that you will love all my conclusions or that you will love what he says, but because I think it will cause us to think and it will cause us to wonder and to reflect. And I think it serves as a major charge to all of us at the end of his essay. So I'm going to share my screen, which is going to have the shir for you. And why does evil exist? And again, this is excerpts from an essay of Rav Shlomo Aviner, which was shared with me. And again, I thought was quite powerful. So number one is the notion, well, let's go with a few approaches. Approach number one is that there is no such thing as evil. Right, this is the principle of Kol Da'avid Rachmana L'Tavavid, that everything that Hashem does is for good, that a good God can never create anything that's not good. Right? How could Hashem, who's Kulo Tov, ever create something that's not Tov? And so approach number one, says Rav Aviner, is Ein Ra Bichlal, Hara Dimyon Shavu, that what we perceive as evil is not really evil. Because how could Hashem create something that is not perfect? And so therefore he says, Ha'el shenasan l'ra makom ba'olamo eino ra klal. What you and I perceive as evil in this world cannot be evil. Why? Because ribono shel olam kulo tov. Because if Hashem is completely good, then how could a completely good God have created something that isn't completely good? And obviously the existence of evil creates an enormous challenge for that. Ela ma she'hincha mevin kara einenu ra klal v'chlal. That which you and I perceive as bad, that which you and I perceive as evil, is not evil at all. Adaraba, hu tov ma'od, ein yafa mimenu. It's really good. There is, in fact, no good beyond that. Right? Why? Because, again, if Hashem is all good, if Hashem is tov, if Hashem is completely good, then how can a completely good God have created anything that is not completely good? And so that is option number one, says Rav Aviner. Obviously, this option, while satisfying the sense that it creates a black and white world for us, where it says that there's no bad, there's no evil, and that anything that you and I perceive as evil is really just our perception, but in the grand scheme of the world, there is no evil whatsoever. And that could be comforting for us, but it also presents enormous challenges for us. Number one is, let's just go for a practical perspective. Are you really going to tell me that the Holocaust was not evil? Right, we are sitting here on the morning of Yom HaShoah. It's very complicated to say that the Holocaust was not evil, that Hitler was not evil. That is very problematic to say. The other problem is, I'd say, like an ethical challenge. And the ethical challenge is that so much of the Torah is a war on evil. We are told, for example, Mechias Amalek, that we are supposed to eradicate evil. So how could there be no such thing as evil if the Torah itself tells us to rid the world of evil? And so essentially what this option would do is it would absolve man of the obligation of fighting injustice. Because I would see injustice around me, and I would simply shrug my shoulders and say, okay, kol David rachmana latav avid, whatever Hashem creates, that's what Hashem wants, and I have no obligation to fix it. And so I would see things like slavery. Let's pick on slavery for a second, because there's an all-time great Rabbi Sacks quote when it comes to slavery that I'll share with you at the end of the class. But slavery, right? So I would say, okay, Hashem created a world that allowed for slavery. Kol David rachmana latav avid. Everything Hashem created must be for good. So I have no obligation to rid the world of injustices. That obviously is ethically problematic. It's practically problematic to suggest the Holocaust wasn't evil. And so Rav Aviner, and I think any of us, would reject this option as overly simplistic. Option number two is the Christian approach. The Christians deal with this exact same issue, which is how can a good God have created something that wasn't completely good? And so they come to the following conclusion, that no, you're wrong, Rabbi Moskowitz. Hashem is good, right? Hu yisbarach kulo tov. God is completely good. Vim kein haraminayin. How, therefore, do you account for evil and wickedness in the world? Me'adam arishon. It had to have been created at some point that was, so to speak, outside of God's creation of good in the world. Hashem bara kulo tov. God created the world as being completely good. Adam arishon chet. And it's Adam arishon who first sinned. Ba cheto v'irvu v'kol. And he messed everything up for us. In other words, were it not for Adam arishon, were it not for the first human being, there would be no evil. There would be no wickedness. There would be no problems in this world. There would be no wars. There would be no fighting. It's Adam arishon who introduces evil into the world, who introduces sin into the world, and that ruins, so to speak, God's perfection. Right? V'hakol na'utz b'chet hakadmon. Everything, therefore, is traced back to the original sin. Now, we, of course, know that's not true. The Torah itself refutes this when the Torah tells us that mankind is rewarded or punished based on his own sins or his own positive actions. It is why, in the second paragraph of Kriyat Shema, we have an entire paragraph that's dedicated to the principles of Schar V'Onesh. Why is that second paragraph in Kriyat Shema? Why is it so fundamental to what you and I believe in? And the answer, of course, is to refute this notion of original sin. To say that the world was created perfect, Adam Arishon sinned, he blew it for all of us. No, 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 says Hashem, right? You are all accountable for your actions, both in the positive sense and in the negative sense. And of course, therefore, we reject approach number two as well. I was remiss at not mentioning at the beginning of the shiur, and I will do so now, so I apologize. But this shiur is sponsored for a refuah shlema for Rafal Aaron HaKohen Ben Rivka, my cousin who is in need of a refuah shlema. And of course, all our learning, all my learning, all of my davening and our shir this morning should be for a refuah shlema for him, B'soch Sha'ar Chole Yisrael. And again, I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. Approach number three is, of course, the heretics, the Kofrim. And the Kofrim say as follows, Zo Tshuva HaAtheists. Avuro hasheila keitzer ribono shalolam mekayem mesara. Right? Again, everyone is predicated on this question. How can evil exist in the world? They would argue, eino kushya klal. This is not a question whatsoever. Ze sheila sheino ral banit. It's not relevant at all. Below mashmut. It doesn't even get off the ground. Right? Why? Because everything is random. Stuff happens. Stuff happens. God may have created the world, but once he created the world, what did he do? So he left the world to its own devices. And of course, we reject that as well. We believe that not only did Hashem create the world, but that Hashem continues to be involved in the world. Now, it is important to note that even within the notion of Hashkacha Pratis, the notion of God's divine providence, there is a machlokas. And so while we have all adopted the approach of the Ramban very famously in multiple places, but let's pick on the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, because it was just referenced in the context of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Ramban very famously articulates a notion that God is intimately involved in every small aspect of the world. Whether or not the fish get caught today is up to Hashem. Whether or not I stub my toe today is up to Hashem. Right? The Ramban says that the whole point of Nisim Niglaim, of open, overt miracles, like the splitting of the sea, like the story in Mitzrayim, are there to remind us of God's providence, so that when we now transition into our everyday lives, we have an appreciation for God's involvement in our everyday life. It is important to know, just in the interest of intellectual integrity, that not everyone agrees with the Ramban. And I'll pick on the Rambam, Maimonides, here for a second, because the Rambam, in his Mor Nevuchim, articulates a notion that Hashkacha Pratis is not equal for everybody. That while there's Hashkacha Klalis, that God in general is manifests his providence over the world, whether or not it manifests itself over me and you in our specific moments in time, that, says the Rambam, is subject to our relationship with Hashem, of our deserving of that providence. And so if I reject God's providence could reject me as well. And so the Rambam articulates a notion that maybe Hashem doesn't necessarily decree that a specific fish is going to eat a specific worm, right? There's Hashkacha Klalis. Hashem is in charge of everything, obviously, but the minutia, perhaps, at various times, Hashem is not going to be as involved in. And again, that's for a shir at a different time. But I think it's important to note that we have obviously weighed the balance over to the side of the Ramban, but there are different approaches and there are different opinions out there. So that is approach number three. Approach number one was this notion that there is no such thing as evil. Obviously, as we said, that's an ethical problem. That is a practical problem. Original sin is obviously overtly rejected by Chazal and the Torah itself. And you have the notion of everything is random, which of course is the atheist's approach, and we reject that as well. We come to approach number four, which we are obviously going to reject as well. And that is the approach of the dualists. The dualists say, you're right. Right? Yesh no ra. The first ones to acknowledge that there is bad in the world, there is evil in the world. Amnam came, yesh Elohim, ach Elohim ze, einenu achrai l'ra mikol vakol. Right? There are multiple gods. Right? This, of course, is most poignantly articulated by the Greeks, right? All mythology, all Greek mythology, if we can transport ourselves back to high school, it's amazing. We force our kids to read this, and then we ignore it for the rest of our lives because we obviously don't think it's as important. But if you can think back to high school when you read Greek mythology, this was the whole notion of Greek mythology, that there was a god of war, and there was a god of peace, and there was a god of love, and there was a god of fire, right? There were multiple gods. Right? So the dualist approach would say that yes, there is God, but he, right, there is what we would call Hashem, but einenu achrai l'ra mikol vakol, but there is something that exists outside of God, which is called evil. Ela shni meima, that there are multiple gods. Shnei Elohiot. There's a God of good, ve'eloka mi'ra, and there's a God of bad. Now, obviously, again, we reject this. We reject this most forcefully in Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? The word Echad is obviously one of the most important words in Judaism. It's what defines monotheism. It's what defines us as religious Jews, the belief in a singular God, in a singular God that has all the power in the world. But just to show you how prevalent this mindset was, lest you reject this and say, Rabbi Moskowitz, this is heresy. No one would believe this. You're wrong. And the way I know you're wrong is because of the Malbim's understanding of that pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The Malbim says, what's Hashem Elokeinu? Right? Two different variations of God's name. So the Malbim presents the idea that Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elokim are actually two different attributes of God. One is the attribute of mercy, the Midas HaRachamim, and the other is the attribute of justice, Midas HaDin. Says the Malbim, why do we say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? For this exact reason. To contradict or to combat the notion of the dualists. That there were those who say that, yeah, there's a God of mercy and there's a God of justice, but they are two separate gods. We come along in Shema and say Hashem Elokeinu, the Hashem that has a divine attribute of mercy and the Hashem that has a divine attribute of justice, Hashem Echad, is all one God. That there are not two gods. Now, the Malbim is not a 5th century commentary. He's not even an 11th century commentary. The Malbim is written relatively late. I apologize, I don't remember if it's a 17th, 18th century. My Jewish history is rusty, right? But it's a later source. It's a later source. So if that's the case, it's clear that even in the time of the Malbim, there was this notion of, I'm sorry, it's even later, I apologize, right? The Malbim's even later. There was this notion of dualism. There was this notion of multiple gods, of a god of war and a god of peace, a god of evil and a god of love, right? So the Malbim comes along and says, no, that's why we say in Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, that yes, Hashem has different attributes, but Hashem Echad, it's all one God. Good, bad, wicked, evil, it's all one God, okay? And that obviously is how we combat this notion, approach number four, of the dualist. Approach number five is obviously the one we're going to labor on most intently, and that is the Jewish approach. So Rav Aviner starts off his argument, and again, the reason why I'm sharing this article with you is because I think he just lays out the ideas in a very coherent, logical fashion. He says, first of all, it's important to recognize that there is something called evil. There is something called evil. There is evil in the world. He says, Reishis yesh davar yadu kol ba'ei olam. It's important for everyone to realize, hara ra, that there is something called evil. Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik has a brilliant article on this, where he talks about a dispute that he once had with a Catholic priest. And the Catholic priest refused to believe that there's something called evil. And Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that no, that Judaism differentiates itself from other religions by believing, yes, there is evil. There is wickedness. HaTorah korah lo bishmo ra. Right? The Torah calls it evil. It happens in two different ways. HaYetzahara. We talk about the evil inclination. Right? And then hara mitzad sivlo shalolam. And then we believe that there's something called evil in the world. That was our problem with approach number one, is if you reject evil altogether, the Torah itself rejects that approach. Torah itself requires us and mandates us to eradicate the world of evil. And so Rav Aviner says, you have to start off with the premise that yes, there is something called evil in this world. It's important for us to recognize it, to be accountable for it, and to eradicate the world of it. That is important. That is point number one. Obviously, point number two then becomes what we do with it. He gives a brilliant mashal here, which says that just because mankind misuses something doesn't necessarily mean that it in and of itself is inherently evil. Okay, so it's important to recognize that, right? Just because mankind abuse something in this world and use it for nefarious purposes does not mean that it's inherently evil or inherently bad, right? So he gives the example of a mazleg, a fork, right? Let's say I give my child a fork and my child takes the fork and stabs his sister with it. Now, of course, that would never happen in the Moskowitz home because the Moskowitz children are absolutely perfect and our meals are calm and peaceful and tranquil, and we all sit around and we sing kumbaya together as we are eating. But let's say, in theory, one of my children were to take a fork and to poke their sister with that fork. And of course, that leads to crying and tears and people, okay, all the things you all know, right? Hayim nemar she'imo malach havala. Would you tell me I'm an evil parent? That I'm an evil parent? That I'm a wicked parent because I gave my child the fork? Right? No heges b'afkerus v'nosenes kli mashchis b'yado. Would you tell me that I gave my child a weapon of destruction? No, it's obviously absurd. Lokain. You would never tell me that. He nosenes kli achila tamim umevi bracha. Right? I gave my child a very useful tool. It's called a fork. Now, my children sometimes think the world was created better before we had forks and knives, and that's why they have gone back to our ancestral ways of eating with their hands. But little do they know, and I keep on trying to remind them of this, but the forks and knives and spoons that nature created for us, or that mankind created for us, are actually great tools, right? Maybe bracha. They're sources of blessing. B'doma l'kach, gam im hishtabshu, hadvarim lamata, ha'olam eino hefker. Right? Even if you and I misuse and abuse, if we bastardize that which God gave us, it doesn't mean that the world is hefker. Doesn't mean that God is a destructive God. It just means that we're misusing it. He says, "Kemo kein amar ribono shel olam, na'aseh adam." He says, I'll give you an example. God said, let us make man. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to Hashem and says, Hashem, maybe you want to choose a different choice of words. because there are going to be people who are going to say, Naseh, we should. And they're going to become heretics. They're going to become kofrim. So don't write those words, Amarlo. So Hashem says back to Moshe, maybe you didn't get the memo, I'm God. Write it. V'harotza litos yite. And the Medrash says, anyone who wants to come along and make a mistake, let them make a mistake. And so certain things, even if we perceive them as bad and we misuse them as evil and wicked, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are inherently wicked. He says, La miso shel davar, hara ba mi rabbono shel olam hu achrai alav. V'lachein anu muvtachim shesof hatova lavo. He says, Derech mashal, hachama hatova, hi imra, would you say that the sun is bad? Would you say that the sun is wicked? Right? Of course the sun is good. Kol ma shebara Hashem ba'olamo. Right? Hashem created the sun. It's good. Im kein, ketzad ki belzeh makas shemesh. How is it then you and I get sunburned? Right? There are many people who feel the sun is destructive. Right? Ela hu shekil kol la'atzmo. But rather it is that we misuse the sun. Ve'ashemesh ein bo ravav. There's no stain with the sun. There's no problem with the sun. It's what we do with the sun that becomes problematic. Kamokin tinok bala es umtsas habasar kshi shlema venechnak. Right? Chas v'shalom lo aleinu. A kid swallows a piece of meat whole and they choke. V'chikol umtsas basar davarahu. Would you say that all meat is inherently wicked and evil? Lav dafka. That's not the case. Ela einu matima latinokes. Rather, what would you say? You would say that you don't give full pieces of steak to a child. At the level that the child is, it's not appropriate for him or her to have the steak. So too with a heretic. How could a heretic exist in the world? Would you say that thinking is bad? Would you say that exploring is bad? No, of course. Right? Thinking is good. Our minds are the most amazing thing that God has gifted us. Rak ach in his galgal mishamayim la'aretz, but on his descendancy from the heavens and earth, na'ase bo shimush shelo kachok v'kvar hura. By the time it filters down to us, now all of a sudden it's bad. And again, that's why I give the analogy of the child here. The child, the meat's not bad. It's just not age appropriate. By the time the meat gets to the child, it's not appropriate for the child. And so for us, we in this world are the children, right? We're not at a spiritual level yet that we can fully appreciate and grasp everything. And so by the time it gets to us, it is bad, but that doesn't mean that it's inherently bad. It means that by the time we experience it, it is bad. So there are two ideas here that you have to unpack. Idea number one is the notion of the fork, which is that God gives us things. Right, Hashem gives us the fork can be good, it could be bad, right? That's our free will. That is our choice in how to use things, right? The technology that was used to create the atomic bomb, the technology that's used to create weaponry is not an inherently bad technology. It's what mankind does with it that makes it challenging, that makes it problematic. Let's take technology for a second. Right? Is social media bad? Of course social media is not bad. But social media we are now seeing is experiencing unintended consequences, really catastrophic unintended consequences on society, on our mental health well-being, on our social networks, right? This is stuff that we are all only becoming privy to now that we didn't fully grasp or appreciate at the onset of technology and social media. Right, but it's not inherently bad. It's what we do with it. That's level number one. Level number two, says Rav Avinair, is it's even more than that. Things that we perceive as bad, right? It's like the meat. It's just because we are the children. By the time it filters down to the world, it has become distorted or it's not appropriate for us at our spiritual level. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's inherently bad. Now, if all of this is the case, okay, let's say we've just waxed and waned in poetics, philosophically, why would God have created the world this way, right? Why would God have created this world this way? The best analogy I have is when we come to study Torah Shabbat Peh, that when I study with a group of guys, oftentimes, a guy will come to me and say, Rabbi Moskowitz, Why is it that the Torah was created this way? Wouldn't it be so much clearer if Hashem had just given us a playbook of exactly what to do? Right? Why does God create the world a certain way? Right? Why does he make Torah so complicated? It would be so much easier if it was A, B, C, D, do it. Right? That would be so much easier for us. Oh, we have Gemara and then Rishonim and Achronim and Machlokas. It's so confusing. Right? I don't know what to do. Everyone's making Shabbos for themselves. So come back to the question of evil. Why would Hashem have created the world this way? Says Rav Avinir, B'chol zos noseres ha-sheila, we are stuck with the question. Mivnei ma nivra kach ha-olam. Why would God have created a world that can be distorted, that can be abused, where wickedness and evil could exist? And so therefore, he develops the following idea. He quotes a medrash, and it's an unbelievable medrash. Yalkut Shimoni, which is a later midrash, for those who took part in our People of the Book series where we studied Medrash. But Yalkut Shimoni is a later Midrash. But the Yalkut Shimoni says something astounding. Says the Yalkut Shimoni, Dalid bara es olo mo arba ruchos. Hashem created the world with four winds, so to speak. Shalosh gemar malachtam. Three of the winds God created himself. V'acheres bara velo saima. In the fourth wind Hashem created, but he left unfinished. Amar, Hashem says, Mishayesh bekocho, yavo v'yigmor. He says, anyone who wants, come and complete this wind. Umahi, what was this fourth wind? Again, I'm not fully understanding all of this along with you, but I think we'll understand the concept. What is this fourth wind? Says the Medrash, Pinas tzafon, it is the northern wind. Umisham harayotze l'olam. And from that northern wind, evil came into this world. Okay? So God creates four winds. Three of them he completes, one of them he does not complete. And in the one that he's not complete, that is where evil comes to the world. In other words, God created a mechanism that we are supposed to complete, but because we are supposed to complete it, and we therefore are inherently imperfect, that's what opened the window, it's what opened the door to allow evil to come into the world, right? That mankind should find that the way to close the door, or at least harness it for good, right? God gave us that tool. It allows us, so to speak, therefore, to be partners with God in shaping the universe. That is an astounding idea. It's an idea we sometimes take for granted, but it's an astounding idea, right? Says Rav Avinir here, V'chi nifzar mimenu yisparach l'saimar m'mlachto. Was God not capable of finishing this fourth wind? Of course not. Chalila. Elakach gazra chachmaso. God, in his infinite wisdom, created this imperfection into the perfect world that he created. Bein ko nosaro sri dehara ne'utzim b'mitzias abriyo. He allowed, he opened the door, so to speak, figuratively and literally. He opened the door for evil to be created. Sridim shel esedar. Opportunities for there to be chaos in this world. Sridim shel tohu vavo. Right? Hashem purposefully created it that way. Why? So that you and I can partner with Hashem in shaping the universe. That is an enormously empowering idea. Rav Avinir proves this from what we say every Friday night. Ki vo shavas mikom malachto, that God rests from creation. Asher bara Elohim la'asos. You ever wonder what that word la'asos mean? La'asos is almost an added word. It could have just said, Kivo shavas mikom lachto asher bara, right? That God is resting from everything he created. What does the word la'asos mean? It means that there is still work to be done. And that's where we come in. That Hashem created a world unfinished, right? La'asos ze olam shel asiya. It's that we are not simply robots in this world, but this is a world of creation. Kach gazra chachmaso livro olam bilti gamor. Right? God in his infinite wisdom created a world that is not finished. Olam shel tohu vavo, a world that sometimes appears chaotic. Why? And that is chaotic. Kedei lemosor la'adam la'avodas ha'asiya. To give us the capacity, to give us the freedom to do, to create, to generate, right? Im kein hadavar mipnei ma Hashem misader yisader adam akol, right? Then why does God do it this way? And again, we'll continue that. He quotes this as well from another famous medrash, where a philosopher came to Rabbi Akiva, and the philosopher says, ma yafem mima, ma se Hashem u'ma se adam, which is better, God's creations or mankind's created? Heshivo ma se adam. Rabbi Akiva says, the creation's a man. He says, ha ketzad, how could that be? So Rabbi Akiva responds to him, and he says, which is better, wheat or bread? You're stuck on a desert island. Which one would you prefer? Would you prefer having some wheat, or would you prefer having some delicious challah that you and I are going to experience at Shabbos? Of course, we'd rather bread, right? Pishtan or baget. Would you rather the materials, or would you rather the clothes? Of course, nizdare is also rasha v'shal, be'emes. Nizkavanti lisho mipnei ma lo nivra adamahul. Right, then why wasn't mankind created circumcised? Amar Rav Yekiva. Rav Yekiva says that's the whole point. Asher bara Elohim lasos. Right? Amenaskein bara Hashem tov avo. God created an imperfect world. God created a chaotic world. Shenihiye anu hamisadarim. So that we can come and perfect that world. God purposefully creates an imperfect world so that we can come and perfect the world. Ve'al pi de ma nisader. Right? In other words, how are we supposed to perfect the world? We are supposed to perfect the world with the mechanisms that God gave us to perfect the world. So God didn't just throw us to the wolves. He didn't just say, here's an imperfect world, go do your thing. No, he created a blueprint for us. He gave us the manual, the guide in how to do it. It's called Torah. It's called mitzvos, right? That is the guide that we were given of how to live a moral, ethical life to perfect that imperfect world. But it's an amazing idea. Yotze shekol avodaso ba'olam hasiya hi hemshech lesilok ubir hatov avo. Our entire job in this world is to eradicate that sense of chaos. It's to perfect all of the imperfections that we see around us. It's to undo all of the injustices that we see. Im kein ein adam achray al ara. Right? We're not responsible for evil. God created evil. God created the capacity for evil. How can we be responsible for something that was created even before the creation of the world? Which is amazing, right? Tohu vavohu, chaos, existed before the creation of man. It means that the mechanism for evil, for wickedness, for chaos, existed long before you and I were created. So we can't be responsible for something that was created before we were created. So what are we responsible for? Ella, hu achray al tikuno. We are responsible to fix it. That is an amazingly powerful, motivating, and empowering idea. Says Rav Aviner that the entire existence of evil in this world allows man to actually fulfill the purpose of creation, which is conquering and completing nature. Right? Hashem, in his perfection, created an imperfect world so that we can fulfill the purpose of creation, which is to perfect creation. I know that's a little bit of a tongue twister, but it's so empowering. How well we do that, depends on whether evil is tamed or whether evil will have the upper hand. That is what Rav Aviner is developing here. That is exactly this notion that we have been talking about here. He says, Amnam noseres od sheila. If that's the case, then we're stuck with a question, which is why, right? Why did God have to do that? Okay, that's a very nice idea, empowering, right? Blah, blah, blah. Why did God do that way? And why shouldn't God have just created a perfect world? Saved us all the trouble. Mimnei ma ribono shel olam lo bara es olam shiatov meikaro. Belo lis mamea. V'chiyesh maniyah bedavar. Right? Could God not have created us all perfect? Why did Hashem specifically have to do that? Elavadai shein miniyav lefanav. Ubemes, right? God could have done whatever he want. Elashehu ose zos kima kima. God creates things in a way where they are perfected in stages, little by little. That's what it means when it says, Basara ma'amaros nivra olam. We're going to read in Pirkei Avos in just a few weeks that God created the world with 10 sayings. Why God couldn't just have said creation? God needed to do 10 mamaros, right? V'halo b'mamar echad yachol libaros. God couldn't have created the world with one saying. Why would he have done it this way? Right, rather, God likes doing things bishlavim, ma'at, ma'at. Hashem creates things in a way where they happen slowly but surely. Vilama, why, says the Mishnah, liton schar letzadikim, shemekayim es olam, shenivra be'asara mamaros. To give the leeway, to give the openness for tzadikim to come and to put their imprint on the world. God does not need to prove anything to anyone, right? The world is not simply God's painting. It's not simply his masterpiece where he says, look at how great I am. Look at what I created. Ella, the greatness of Hashem is that he tolerates things happening in stages. The greatness of God is that he was mitzamtzem himself. In mitzamtzem, he minimized his perfection, so to speak, lahavdil. So he retreated from his perfection to allow us to make our imprint. Magadol chesed sha'asa imanu borei olam. How great is the kindness that God created for us? B'mashesh shilenu be'atzmius shel binyan olam lios notlim chelik b'minyan. No, that God gave us the ability to participate in the creation of the world, right? What a chesed of Hashem that he allowed us to do that. Think about all the research that's done on IKEA. IKEA is an amazing concept, right? We pay a price for something that we then have to go home and build it. And if anyone has ever built something with IKEA, you know it's not simple. In fact, Rabbi Josh Flug, one of the great rabbis of our community, did an amazing thing. So if you ever look at the IKEA instructions, there are no words on it. And the reason why there are no words on it is because they want it to be a universal set of instructions that whether I'm here in China, Japan, Pakistan, I'm able to appreciate their instructions. So what they do is instead of using words, it's all images. Okay? And it's impossible to follow. If anyone's ever built something from IKEA, you know that you always get to the end and there are like those four screws that are left over. And you're left there wondering, did IKEA make the mistake or did I make the mistake, right? And that's when usually you get frustrated and there's a fight and whatever. Okay, it's an amazing concept that you and I pay to then build. You and I pay to have that agmas nefesh. And yet we do it anyways. They call it, researchers call it the IKEA effect, which means that when we participate in the building of something, we actually value it more than if I simply go to a store, hand them my credit card, and it gets delivered. I value it more. I have more skin in the game. It means more to me. And so when they actually asked people to place a price on furniture, they priced the IKEA furniture more. Why? Because I had a hand in building it. That is what Rav Aviner is developing here. Magadol ha-chesed sha'asa imanu borei olam. What a great act of kindness that God gave to us, that he allowed us to build the furniture with him, that he was mitzamtzem himself so that we can participate. We can be the builders. We are now the builders of the world. We are the ability to partner with Hashem in the world. And therefore, he says, there's one last idea that we need to develop. Hold on. Sorry, I just want to skip ahead a little bit. He says on page number... Okay. So he says here, I'll just read a couple more sources. He says that that there's one more piece to the puzzle. And that last piece to the puzzle is that evil can be a stimulant for good. Evil can be a stimulant for good, right? We know this from different Ma'amari Chazal. For example, we know over here, Ein Adam Omed Al Divrei Torah Im Elim Kein Nichshal Behem, right? That a person, the Gemara in Gittin tells us, that a person can only grow in his Torah if he first makes a mistake, right? Zo Madrega Emunah Shlema Hayadua Mikol Tzara Ba Yeshua. That notion that from every point of difficulty comes a Yeshua, right? V'shehashevach mofia dafka mitoch omek hagnus, that the praise is going to come from the difficulties. We spoke about that a little bit on Pesach, those who are there. Why are the Jewish people always compared to grapes? Why are the Jewish people always compared to grapes? Right? Pesach, the Seder, it's so much about wine. So I spoke about how if you think about it, right? Grapes, what do? You go to the store, you buy a bundle of grapes and you beat it into a pulp. You literally pulverize it. And if you stopped the scene right there, you would assume that the grapes were decimated, they're gone, they're useless, you have devalued them completely. And yet you and I both know that from those grapes can emerge something far more expensive and valuable, which is a nice bottle of wine, right? That is this last idea of Rav Aviner, that this notion of actually that evil can be the source, it can be the stimulus for good. And so what we've developed here is this notion that even evil has its own positive consequences as well, right? Number one is that people are going to work hard together to get rid of evil. Okay, if there's evil in the world, we are going to band together to rid the world of evil. Number two is that people are going to feel accomplished when evil is eventually overcome. Number three is evil, whether we like it or not, often causes changes that would not often otherwise come from the world. So for example, right, we have the internet because the United States government was afraid of the evils of nuclear war and built a system that would avoid that possibility, okay, or be able to overcome that possibility. And so evil allows progression in the world, right? It helps people appreciate good. Think about if you have a painting that's completely white, you have no appreciation for the painting. If you put black on the painting, that contrast gives you an appreciation for each color. So if we didn't have evil, we would have no appreciation for what good is. And finally, evil provides us with a choice, right? Evil is an inherent outgrowth of free will. It's an inherent outgrowth of God saying, here are the keys to the world. Here's the fourth wind. Go and complete it yourself, right? And that's why evil came through that door, because when God gave us that ability, when God gave us that free will, yeah, so some people used it and some people abused it, but that is an unfortunate consequence of the necessity for free will. I want to develop that last idea though a little bit. And that is the notion that a perfect God created an imperfect world perfectly so that we can perfect it. Okay? And I want to develop it from a really amazing chapter in a book by Rabbi David Aaron, which is called The Secret Life of God. And Rabbi Aaron develops the following idea, and it's read this over and over again. Over and over again. Read it once a month, once a week. It is the most empowering idea that I've ever read in my life. He says, when I was a kid, I thought that God was bored and wanted a pet to play with. Since when I was bored, I amused myself with my pet guinea pig. Okay? So I thought that God did the same thing, except that we, human beings, were the guinea pig. Sorry, I'll blow it up for some people. Many adults today have a similar idea of God and creation. They think that God was floating in outer space somewhere, and for some whimsical or ludicrous reason, God decided to create people. They will say that God didn't need to create you or me. He has no vested interest in us, but he just felt like creating us. Such a perspective is problematic, says Rabbi Aaron, because it robs us of any intrinsic divine value. It robs us of any ultimate significance. It communicates that essentially we can do nothing for God, except perhaps amuse him in our moments of boredom. We have nothing ultimate to contribute. Our existence really doesn't matter or make a difference to God, right? You and I have never thought about it in those terms, but it really is an amazing concept to think about, right? Why did God need to create us? Why are you and I consequential? Why is our existence consequential? Why do we matter? But that is not true, he says. Once you've understood the depth of what Kabbalah is teaching, you begin to realize how significant you are. God needs us. Or, to be more accurate, God chooses to need us, right? That's what Rav Aviner is talking about. God, in his infinite perfection, chooses to need us. What an amazing idea. God doesn't need to manifest divine, dynamic perfection, though he is free to do so. However, once God chooses to manifest this possibility, then imperfect, you and I, struggling in this imperfect world, in a process of becoming, striving towards perfection, now are necessary to God, right? An amazing idea, right? Our perfection is now necessary to God, okay? This is what Jewish tradition means when it teaches that the work of humanity is of lofty necessity of Hashem, right? The work that we do, that which we contribute, is a necessity to Hashem. He says here, if God is perfect, then why did he create such an imperfect world filled with imperfect people? That is our million-dollar question today. If God is perfect, why did he create evil? Why did he create imperfection? Why did he create people with disabilities, right? You can take this in any different direction that you want. The very first pasuk in Bereishis, we already studied this, tohu vavohu. This sounds like God did a pretty crummy job. The minute he creates the world, he puts the world into a state of chaos. You ever wonder that? God creates the world, and all of a sudden it's tohu vavohu. But the truth is, says David Aaron, Rabbi David Aaron, similar to what Rav Aviner said, that God did a perfect job. What's perfect about this world is the chaos. God perfectly created an imperfect world. It's the perfect place for growth. It's the perfect place for challenge. It's the perfect place for triumph. It's the perfect stage for an exciting drama about becoming perfect. If you struggle within the chaos within you and around you and turn it into order, then you are doing a great divine service. If you acknowledge your imperfections and the imperfections of the world, work hard, and rise to the challenge to fix them, then you are a vehicle for the expression of God's dynamic perfection. This is our human greatness. This is our mission on earth in service to God. We are human characters in a divine drama. When we say nobody is perfect, is precisely what's perfect about everyone. Think about that. Right? The notion that none of us are perfect is precisely what's perfect about this world. However, this is true only when you use your imperfections as starting points for growth. Right? When we use the chaos of the world as starting points for creating order in the world. If you don't do that, then you're not part of the divine process. Right? Then God is not part of your life. You forfeited the very meaning and reason for your existence. Why did God create an imperfect world filled with imperfect people? Why did God create a world with slavery and with evil? Because God's absolute perfection includes the possibility for dynamic perfection, becoming perfect, right? This type of perfection is expressed through imperfect me and you, struggling in this world to improve ourselves, striving and working hard to becoming perfect. But once Hashem does that, what does it also open the door to? It also opens the door to people misusing that. It also opens the door to people abusing that. And that is what we called evil. That is what we call the challenges of when people misuse all of that. And so he says over here, let me just flip that, sorry. He says over here, right, perfectly imperfect. God created humanity to be his vehicle for the expression of dynamic perfection and to participate in the struggle to become perfect. We are highly qualified for this mission because we are imperfect characters living in an imperfect world. We have an evil inclination that challenges us daily. We have the capacity to do evil, but we can also choose to do great good. We are able to fail, but we are also able to succeed. We are able to destroy, but we are also able to build. Our lives can be filled with challenge, adventure, and growth. Angels are perfect. They have no evil inclination. They have no free choice. They can't struggle and they can't fail. They do not wrestle to overcome evil. Only human beings can fulfill this divine mission because only imperfect characters, struggling to improve ourselves, striving to become perfect, only human beings can fight evil, overcome evil, choose goodness and grow. This is our divine mission. If we're willing to accept it, this is our service to God. I think this piece by Rabbi David Aaron is the singular most powerful description of our role in this world, of how a perfect God could have created this notion of imperfection, how a perfect God could have created this notion of evil, why Hashem would have created this notion of evil, why a perfect God would have created an imperfect world, and the answer is, obviously, so that you and I can come to perfect it. I'm happy to send anyone that piece by Rabbi David Aaron, because I believe it is so powerful, and I really believe that you should read it over and over again, because I think it's such an empowering idea that God needs us, that Hashem created a world in a way that he would need us, what he calls dynamic perfection. And the reason why God creates that dynamic perfection is a manifestation of his perfection. I'll share with you one last quote that I promised I would share earlier, but it's a slightly different topic, but it's the same idea, which is slavery, right? If slavery is abhorrent and evil and wicked, why was slavery ever able to exist? And so I'll share my screen again with you. This is a different set of shore sheets from a different shear that I've given, but you'll appreciate it nonetheless. This is from Rabbi Sachs, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Says Rabbi Sachs, in miracles, God changes nature, but never human nature. Were he to do so, the entire project of the Torah, the free worship of human beings, would have been rendered null and void. God wanted to abolish slavery, but by their own choice, and that takes time. Ancient economies were dependent on slavery, okay? So he, again, develops this idea that God waited for us, so to speak. And Benjamin Blech, which we are going to hear from this Sunday night, develops this idea from Rabbi Sachs when he says the following. God waited for Lincoln to free the Jews. Right? God waited for Lincoln to free the Jews. Is slavery inherently evil? Right? Yes. Why does God therefore create it? Because we now become his ambassadors. We become the builders. God waited for Lincoln to free the slaves. God waited for humanity to make that decision to perfect the world. That is the greatest contribution that we can give to mankind. And so that is the idea that I wanted to develop with you this morning. I think it is such a powerful idea and an empowering idea. I think it is a charge and a challenge to every single one of us to think about, right? It's a manifestation of our humanity that in a perfect God created an imperfect world perfectly so that we can perfect it. I am going to, in the chat, right after I finish, share the source sheets for anyone who is interested in them. But I hope at least I gave people something to think about, that I hope I gave us some food for thought on Yom HaShoah as we're all struggling with this notion of evil. Again, I want to end by what I started off with, which is that no matter how much clarity we gained from this experience, obviously it cannot come close to the real understanding that Hashem created the world in a way like this on purpose. And even Moshe Rabbeinu was not privy to understanding why it is that the world was created in such a way. But again, I hope at least that you and I have a little bit of a greater understanding of what it is we're supposed to understand as a result of this, and how it is that we are supposed to better our lives as a result as well. And so I want to wish everyone a meaningful Yom HaShoah. Come back, 12 o'clock, Dr. Bernstein, an amazing tour of Krakow, not to be missed. And again, I want to thank the anonymous sponsor for sponsoring this year, for Refuah Shleima, for my cousin, Rafal Aaron Cohen Ben Rivka, that our learning should be for Refuah Shleima. Everyone have a meaningful day.